We are leading into the Game with No Name weekend in a couple weeks with a series that we're doing. This is part three, Jesus the Competitor. Come back next week because my friend Ken Moyer, Ken is a Southbrooker, he and his family, and he is also an ex-Cincinnati Bengal, and he has some great stories that I'm going to tell that he's told me about competing at that level, leading into the big game with No Name weekend that is now officially around here, the pregame weekend, because actually we're going to do now a pregame type format. But we're talking about competing, and if I gave you a chance, we all have our stories of when we competed and we overheated, right? Here is embarrassing competition story number three that you get to hear from me in this series, okay? So if you're keeping track, this is number three. There is, it's way in the double digits, friends, okay? It's way in the double digits. I knocked out a girl once at church camp. Gave her a concussion. I kid you not, they had to call the squad. We were playing Capture the Flag. How many of you have ever played Capture the Flag? It is the greatest game ever invented. But Capture the Flag, you have, you know, two opposing teams and you got to capture the other team's flags. We were playing on the big open field at our church camp. And when I played Capture the Flag, I played Go After the Flag with all of gusto. And I mean, it's a game of strategy and cunning and speed. And I loved Capture the Flag. I always wanted to play it all day long. And it was hot July afternoon, church camp. You know, and little sinners needed church camp. Toward the end of our Capture the Flag game, I was running full speed. It was a critical moment, and little tiny Heather Colson got in my way. And we collided, and I temporarily knocked her out and gave her a concussion. They had to call the squad, and here's the worst part of that story. I was the dean of the camp that week. I was the dean of the camp. I wasn't one of the campers. I was the dean. I knocked a kid out, okay? I'm pretty sure I'd be arrested today if I did that. This was 30 years ago. We all have those stories where we competed and we overheated, right? Or we took it too far. And we're in this series leading into the biggest competition in America in a few weeks. And by the way, biggest day in football is tomorrow. It's not in 2 weeks. The biggest day. I mean, Vikings fans. We got any Vikings fans here? Okay, we got any Eagles fans here? Any Eagles? I know. And we got some Eagles fans. Any Patriots fans here? All right. No, we got booze. We got booze. How many of you are praying that Tom Brady cannot play tomorrow? Come on. Oh, wait a minute, people. Wait a minute. That is, you are Christian, are you not? How many are rooting for the Jaguars then? Okay, that's kind of a crazy question to ask. We Americans, we love competition, right? I mean, our nation was born out of, we're going to beat them British, right? We're going to beat their butts back to England. That's, we are born competitors. We love to compete. And we've been learning, though, that the word competition comes from a Latin conjunction, competere, right? Competere, it's a conjunction of two words. It means strive or aim together. Comp, with, or to agree with. And petere means to strive, to aim. If it wasn't so clunky, I would name our ministry that we're going to launch this year for students Competere, because I just, oh man, I want us to get this idea that there's no better feeling than competere, right? When you're with other people and you're striving together, you're competing. But when it goes into climbing over people, contempting people, it is ugly. It is ugly. Anne Lamott, the great writer, she says it like she usually says it. Some wonderful, dazzling successes are going to happen for some of the most awful, angry, undeserving people you know. People who are, in other words, not you. We love competition, but we don't like it when other people win. Now, here's an interesting thing today. We have half the room that would love to dismiss competition, and we never have competition. The other half of you would love to write editorials about not keeping score, right? That that's like the end of America as we know it, if we just give trophies to everyone, right? So like as I say that, some of you just start getting heated up, right? Because, no, we can't do that. That's the end of America as we know it, if we just start giving trophies out to everyone. Well, we've already done that, so sorry for you. But we're all scorekeepers. Those of you here tonight who think I'm not competitive, you have competed. You have competed. Because we are all scorekeepers. When you get to a game partway in, what's the first question you ask when you get to a game and it's already started? What's the first question you ask? What's the score? I mean, we all want to know the score, right? In football, can you imagine playing football and not keeping score? That would just be insane, wouldn't it? In football, we keep it score with touchdowns and field goals. Or if you're the Browns, with field goals, okay? Right? In Monopoly, can you imagine playing Monopoly and not keeping score? It would never end, right? It would never end. But how do we keep score in Monopoly? With fake money, right? Poker players keep score. How do you keep score in poker? With chips, right? The British keep score in cricket, and nobody knows how. Nobody knows how they keep score. Does anybody here know how they keep score? I don't understand the game. I don't understand the game. But we know that there's nothing wrong with keeping score, because when we compete, we strive together, we make each other better. It's a human inclination to want to get better, to want to improve at just about anything we do. It's really a sign of life, right? It's a sign of life that you want to get better. If you don't want to get better, you're probably just, you're dead man walking. You're just walking around, but you're really not alive. So it's a good thing to, in the most true-spirited way of understanding the Latin word competere, it is a good thing to compete. But I love how John Ortberg, the writer, puts it. Our behavior will be dictated by whatever scoring system we are hooked up to emotionally. You want to know what makes you tick? Tell me what you keep score on. Right? One of the reasons that many of us find it easier to give our lives to our work rather than to relationships is because which one is easier to keep score on? I mean, I can look up Forbes magazine every year and I can find out who the 500 wealthiest people in the world are. Keep them score, right? I was a kid. I learned how to do math through football, baseball, and basketball cards. Any of you, that's how I learned math. I can tell you Wilt Chamberlain statistics in the 60-61 season, because when I was a kid, I memorized those puppies. And it's interesting because you look on the back of a football card and you can just see, oh my gosh, that's what a score, what a career this guy has had. But there are no professional father cards, are there? You won't find, last year, Jim had 312 eye-to-eye contacts with his kids. He had a career high in being openly affectionate with his kids, 187 minutes a week. He averaged in uninterrupted quality time last year. You won't find that, right? So that's why it's easy to give ourselves to work than relationships and spiritual things, because it's a lot easier to measure your worth and compare yourself to other people by the things you can score on. Whatever your soul is connected to in terms of keeping score, that's where your emotion comes out. Now, what we've been learning in this series is about Jesus. What was he like? Well, he was a man of emotion. He was a man of passion. He was a man of desire. He was a man of purpose. He wasn't just this Prozac Jesus, as we've learned, who just kind of went around numbly saying really smart things that people went, oh, he's deep. No, he didn't. He was passionate. We learned a few weeks ago that Jesus cleansed the temple because people were being shut out of the temple who were non-Jews because of the marketplace. The scam operation had been set up there. And look, remember this, John 2:17, he's quoting Psalm 69:9. That's when his disciples remembered the scripture, "Zeal for your house consumes me." Jesus was a man who was passionate about the work of God that had been given to him. And there's an interesting word in the New Testament that I just have been waiting to talk to you about. It's been last year sometime, Laura actually spoke about this a little bit. And I want to tell you this word that is used of Jesus. Okay? So I'm going to talk about intestines and bowels for a moment. Any of you interested in that? Because the New Testament word that I want you to learn tonight, say this with me, because it's just a fun word to say. Say splunkna. Splunkna. He has great splunkna. It literally means intestines or bowels. Or as Barney Fife said, down there where everything gets tight. You know? That's what splunkna means. But colloquially, it meant heart. Guts. If you're in fitness, core. Like Jesus had a core. So it's used of him many times when it says Jesus moved with compassion. Or Jesus feeling mercy. It's funny because literally, if you didn't read the colloquialism in it, literally it would read Jesus had a bowel movement. that's literally how it would read. But euphemistically, it's Jesus was moved with passion. When he cried over Jerusalem, he was having a bowel movement. You know, his intestines were moved, his guts. Now, we know that this actually, our splunkna is in our amygdala now. Now we know that the seat of our emotions are actually up here. They're in our minds, right? But this is the splunkna that we're talking about tonight. What made Jesus' splunkna move? What was at the core of where he directed his passions? Well, what you're going to learn is where all your competitive passions need to go to, if you are a follower of his. If you claim to be a follower of him who did this, the person who did this, then you want tonight to be a life-changing night, because this is where, in business, in academics, in athletics, this is how now you will want to compete. Nothing wrong with competing. We keep score. That's good. But there's a how to it based on Jesus. I'm going to show you a story. And it's a really cool story in Luke chapter 9. You have a Bible, you can turn there. But I'm going to show it up here on the screens. And this is getting toward the end of his run, his three-year ministry. And they started arguing, his disciples, they started arguing over which of them would be the most famous. Okay, now they were just like every one of us preachers, right? They were just like every one of us preachers. They were not completed works, were they? The disciples, the 12, started arguing over which one of thee would be the most famous. This whole chapter 9 is a Jesus shaking his head story. Oh my gosh, these are the guys that are going to change the world. Woo! Wow! These are the guys I'm entrusting my mission to after I leave. It's one of the reasons Jesus chose them is they were competitive people. But he was going to do what he wants to do with you. He was going to repurpose that competitive zeal, that passion, that heart. And when Jesus realized how much this mattered to them, he brought a child to his side. Now, this is not hyperbole. Get this. Filter this through your competitive instincts. Whoever accepts this child as if the child were me, accepts me. Next verse. Look at the next verse. And whoever accepts me, accepts the one who sent me. You become great by accepting, not asserting. Now this is interesting, because many of us, our competitive desires are asserting. So we got to where we were in life by the imposing of our will, right? That's how you become great in America. You impose your will over the opponent. I love that part of competing. I love that part. But in America, that's how we keep score. Who imposed their will? You even hear this in athletic contests. But Jesus said greatness in his scorecard is the person who connects, especially with the least. Like a child in that day had no power. Children had no power. To accept a child was to accept a person that could do nothing for you. And no rights, no power. And so he says your spirit, not your size, makes the difference. You want to become great. It's not how big you are. It's not how successful you are. Greatness in my scorecard is your capacity to connect, especially to those who are the least. And the way he would summarize this is he would summarize it in other passages by saying, the first will be last and the last will be first. He was not saying scoring doesn't matter. He was simply saying that all of your power will be leveraged to connect, to make one, to lift up, not to show how great you are, to show how strong you are. And John spoke up. So here's an illustration. Master, we saw a man using your name to expel demons, and we stopped him because he wasn't of our group. What's not in here is Jesus shook his head again. Oh my gosh. Don't stop him. If he's not an enemy, he's an ally. Again, they're trying to separate people. They're trying to delineate people, compare. They're not one of ours. And he's saying, no, that's not our game, gang. Our game is to accept. Our game is to connect. His ultimate game would be Jew and Gentile being one, slave and free being one, male and female being one, that because in him there would be no separations. There would be oneness. He's an ally. Don't make him an enemy. Next verse. Verse 51. When it came close to the time for his ascension. So that's the code for it's really getting intense now. Like the clock's running down. He gathered up his courage and steeled himself for his journey to Jerusalem. The New International Version translates that he resolved to go to Jerusalem. So there was this a little bit of pep talk he had. This is the final part of the journey to the cross. And you would have to steel yourself for that, right? I love the imagery that the Message Bible uses there. He steeled himself. He sent messengers on ahead. We know that they were making preparations. They came to a Samaritan village to make arrangements for his hospitality. But when the Samaritans learned that his destination was Jerusalem, they refused hospitality. Now this is the same an illustration of the same principle of not making enemies. I want you to see something here. So if you were to look at a map, this would be the Mediterranean Sea right here, the Mediterranean Sea. And then Galilee, where they were, was up here. This is Galilee. And then right here was this little place called Samaria. It's easy to see on the map because it looks like an orc. Samaria looks like an orc. And then down here would be Judea, which is where Jerusalem was. Jerusalem, you actually went south to go up to Jerusalem because it was higher elevation. Now, Jews would never go through Samaria. Never. They were the enemy. They were the other. They hated each other. And this went back centuries. It's funny because this region right here was the Decapolis, the 10 cities region. And they would literally go around to go to Jerusalem if they were coming from Galilee because these people were so despised. They were half-breeds, number one. The Samaritan people came out of Babylonian captivity, so they were half-Jews. They were half-breeds. They were the lesser people, right? It's us versus them. And Jesus intentionally goes through Samaria. This is a friend-finding mission. He is making a statement to these guys who want to constantly us versus them, show them there is no us versus them. Our battle is not against flesh and blood. It's against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. And I'm going to show you, I'm going right into the heart of the place that none of us will go. I'm going to go into Samaria. And when they learned that he was headed for Jerusalem, which very clearly showed he was a Jew, they would not extend hospitality. This is an extension of Jesus to make friends with Samaritans, and they refused his offer. He is rejected. If you ever get rejected for friendship, Jesus, our high priest, is acquainted with the pain of that because he did that many times, and it wasn't received. It wasn't reciprocated. What is he telling them? He's telling them in simplest demonstration that he possibly can that our spirit is all about making oneness. Not us versus them. Now this is huge because I don't know about you. In my years as an American, we've never been in an us versus them like we are right now. It's just us versus them. I read recently that the number one increasing opposition in families to intermarriage is Democrat Republican. It's not Protestant Catholic. It's not racial, which is good. But the number one thing is, honey, He's an axe murderer, we know, but he better be a Democrat. Honey, we want the best for you, and you can marry whomever you want, but if he's not a Republican, we're not paying for the wedding. Okay, that's really what's going on now. They're like, can you feel the tension in the room going up as I just say, Republican and Democrat? Just like, right, this is no fun. This is no fun now. Because we're so amped to us versus them. Us versus them. Let's draw lines. You know, let's avoid the Democrats. Let's avoid the Republicans. And Jesus would go right into the heart of that and say, wait a minute. Oh, you go ahead and let the world be that way. Let the world think that our battle is against flesh and blood, but that's not our battle. That's not our battle. Our battle is against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realm. It's not people. I want you to do something right now. I really debated whether I was going to do this or not. But if you came with someone tonight, I want you to turn to them right now and say, my battle is not with you. Okay? If you didn't, just say it to the person you're thinking about, okay? Just say it to the person. Yeah, say that right now, because it's kind of risky, because I'm sure there were some tensions in some cars coming in tonight where you know, my battle is not with you. We constantly want to live out an us versus them mentality, and we will find ways to disengage. We will find reasons. We will find the most petty reasons to go us versus them. Have you ever heard that? There's an old story about a guy who was standing on the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco, and he's lonely and he's despondent, and a man walks up to him, and the man comes up to him and says, friend, he clearly sees lonely, God loves you. And the lonely man is kind of taken aback by that, and he kind of gets a little teary-eyed. And so the man asks him, are you a Christian? Are you a Jew? Are you a Hindu? What? And the man says, I'm a Christian. He says, well, that's great. So am I. He says, Protestant or Democrat? Or Protestant or Catholic, I mean. Freudian slip there. Protestant or Catholic? And he said, I'm Protestant. He said, oh, that's great. So am I. He said, what denomination? The man said, well, I'm Baptist. He said, oh, that's a miracle. I'm Baptist too. Are you Northern Baptist or Southern Baptist? And the man said, I'm Northern Baptist. I'm Northern Baptist too. Are you Northern Conservative Baptist or Northern Liberal Baptist? He says, well, I'm Northern Conservative Baptist. Oh, that's amazing. I am too. Are you Northern Fundamentalist Baptist? Or are you Northern Liberal Baptist? Oh, I'm Northern Fundamentalist Baptist. Oh, that's amazing. I'm a Northern Fundamentalist Baptist too. He says, well, are you Northern Fundamentalist Great Lakes Region Baptist? Or are you Northern Fundamentalist Eastern Region Baptist? He says, well, I'm Northern Fundamentalist Great Lakes Baptist. And they go, well, that's amazing. I just can't believe it. It's a miracle. I am too. He says, well, are you Northern Fundamentalist Great Lakes Region Baptist? Council of 1879 Baptists? Are you Northern Fundamentalist Conservative Great Lakes Region Council of 1912 Baptists? And the man said, well, I'm Council of 1912. And the other guy said, heretic, died. He pushed him off the bridge right there. Isn't it amazing how we'll find reasons to say us versus them? We're drawing lines. I just want you to know this is not how Jesus' passion was all about going through Samaria. It doesn't mean that he didn't have his enemies, because he did. But his whole heart was about taking Jew and Gentile, male or female, slave and free, and saying, oneness is what the Father is all about. Myself and the Father are one. We are the great three in one, the Trinity. Everything God is about, everything Jesus was about, was oneness. Not competitive. It's us versus them. Miamisburg versus Springboro. West Carrollton versus... we're going to show them which is the best, you know. And it's amazing. Samaritan versus Jew. Us versus them. And when you become a follower of Jesus, that's just not your deal anymore. You give that up. Miroslav Volf, the Yale theologian, said the tendency to exclude the other, which religious leaders in Jesus' day often regarded as a great virtue, was regarded by Jesus as a great sin. Wow. That is spot on. So John Arbery said Jesus treated people on the other side as if they were people on his side. A number of years ago, Robert Putnam wrote the book Bowling Alone. And he talked about how sociologists say there are actually two kinds of connection. There's bonding and there's bridging. Bonding is when you get close to people that are like you, that you're already close to. But bridging is when you connect with people different from you. You connect with the them. And he talks about how, you know, bridging is the ultimate statement socially. And bridging is what Jesus came to be. He was a bridger. That's what he was. And for those of you like me who, you know, competitive, my natural inclination is to knock out Heather Colson if she's in my way to capture the flag. Like, that's you let my carnal side go, I'll knock old Heather out every time, right? And, you know, I gave that up when I said, Jesus, you're my leader. I want to live like you. To live like Jesus, his scorecard and our win. Listen. Our win as a church was whenever any one of you in any given situation acts, thinks, and then feels as Jesus would if he were in that situation. That's our win. That's the scorecard. And so the next time you just want to drill the competition and humiliate them academically, in business, in athletics. I didn't say that it's wrong to win. I'm saying you want to humiliate them. Remember this. Now look at these words as this passage, this story closes. Then when the disciples, James and John, learned of it, okay, they learned that Jesus was not received. They said, Master, do you want us to call a bolt of lightning down out of the sky and incinerate them? I mean, aren't you thankful these are the guys that he used? Right? You know, as Ghostbuster said, we got the men, we got the means, let's blow them away, all right? Jesus turned on them, and this is interesting because Eugene Peterson actually translates this literally, he turned on them. It was a whoom. Of course not! Do you see this? All of this is a progression of saying they're constantly us versus them, us versus them, us versus them. And Jesus says, no, your battle is not against flesh and blood. Your battle is not against Springboro or Balbrook or West Carrollton or them Republicans or them Democrats or them Samaritans or them Jews. That's not your battle. Your battle is against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realm. So let's just make this as simple as we possibly can. Okay, this is really going to be deep. Okay, so I got two sermon and a sentence statements to make. Here they are. Okay, this is deep. This is really deep. Competition, say it with me. Competition that leads to comparison, bad. Okay, like bad. Well, we're constantly really just climbing over people. We're better than they are. And remember, the reason that our competitive desires get inflamed in competitive endeavors is because it's an easy way to keep score. We're better than they are. What's her GPA? What did he score on his SAT? What colleges did she get accepted into? What's his salary annually? And it's amazing how, it's funny. How many of you have been at church? How many of you have been going to a church more than 1 year? Raise your hand. Have you been going to a church for more than 1 year? Okay. This is what you're susceptible to. Listen to this. Listen to this. Harold Kushner, the great author, once told about a very bright but driven pre-med student at a very competitive college while traveling, he said, in the East the summer before his junior year. He met a spiritual guru who said to him, don't you see you're poisoning your soul with this success-oriented way of life? Your idea of happiness is to stay up all night studying for an exam so you can get a better grade than your best friend. Your idea of a good marriage is not to find the woman who will match your soul, but to win the girl everybody wants. That is not how people are supposed to live. Come join us in an atmosphere where we will all share and love one another. And the young man, Harold Kushner said, was ripe for this. He called his parents and told them he was dropping out of school to live in an ashram. 6 months later, his parents received this letter from him. Dear Mom and Dad, I know you weren't happy about my decision, but I want to tell you how it changed me. It has changed me so much. For the first time in my life, I'm at peace. Because here there is no competing, no trying to get ahead of everyone, of anyone. This way of life is so in harmony with my inner soul that in only 6 months, I've become the number two disciple in the entire community. I think I can be number one by June. It's amazing how you start going to church and, you know, we start competing. We start comparing. Bad. Okay, so let's say it together again. This is your line. Competition that leads to comparison. Bad. Okay, bad. Now here's the good. Here's the good. Say this with me. Competition that leads to connection. Good. It's good. Competition is a good thing when it leads to connection. That we elevate the them. We still embrace the them. And it's not us versus them. It's we're competing and we're making each other better. Right? And when that leads to respect, it's a good thing. It's a good thing. It ennobles the soul. It ennobles the human spirit. And it's just a good thing. This was Jesus. Jesus' passion was all about how can I bridge the disconnection between Galilee and Samaria, between Judea and Samaria. How can I do that? Oh, I got to go to Samaria. Sometimes you got to go into Samaria. You got to go there, right? You know, when you step onto that court this week, are you going to be the one that builds bridges? Are you going to be the one, kill them, annihilate them? Humanity just, you know, contempt and conflicting and climbing. And which one are you going to be? Because I'm telling you, Southbrook, you gave up the comparison game when you became a follower of Jesus. That's part of your journey. It's part of the deal. There's an author by the name of Robert Roberts who tells a story about a game where fourth graders were shown how to play balloon stomp. Have you ever played balloon stomp? Balloon stomp is where you take a balloon, you tie it a string to your leg, and the goal is you're to stomp out everybody else's balloons, and then while you're doing that, you're also trying to protect your balloon, right? Now, it's a total Darwinian game. Survival of the fittest, a zero-sum game. At the end of the game, there's one balloon left. That's it. And Robert Roberts said that here's this game, and he says, you just see the Darwinian lust come out in these 10-year-olds, you know. 10-year-olds can be so Darwinian, right? Just, you know, we're going to crush their balloons. And there's just this unleashing of competitive zeal, he writes. Now, some kids, not as competitive, tried to stay in the fringes and the corners and protect their balloons, but eventually their balloons were stomped on. And at the end, there was one balloon left. And the interesting thing he said was that kid won, but he lost because everybody knew he was also the most disliked kid in the whole room. So you win, but you lose. Right? Then he said something really disturbing happened. Next, the sociologist brought in a class full of developmentally challenged kids and tied balloons around their legs. And as good as they could do it, they explained to them what balloon stomp is all about. And all the kids heard was the goal is to stomp the balloons out. And he said it was an amazing situation because at first there was this discomfort as people were going, oh my gosh, we're going to watch these kids who just love so well and they're going to be in this competitive brawl. This is not right. Well, for example, he said he saw one little boy who was so frustrated he couldn't get his balloon stomped, and a little girl knelt down and held his balloon, sort of like a place kicker has someone holding the ball for him, and he stomped his balloon out. Big smile. And he kneels down, grabs her balloon, and she stomps her own balloon out. Before long, all the balloons are stomped out, and everybody's smiling. the great balloon stomp. Everybody won. And he said, what happened? What happened was, these kids changed the rules of the game. The rules of the game were that the losers were the winners. The rules of their game was, we're not trying to compare ourselves and prove ourselves. We're trying to help each other. That's the rules of the game. And in that game, everybody won. And Jesus, he says, you want me to tell you how to be great? Lift a little child who can't help you. Help them stomp their balloon. Next time you're in a balloon stomping contest, help people get ahead. And you'll be great. You'll be a winner in my eyes. Let's pray. This is really, really hard. Boy, do I have an easy time preaching this, Father. Oh, man, it's harder for me to live it. I can feel so spiritual, and then I get on the court. But thank you for not giving up on me, on us. A lot of us have gotten to where we are because we asserted and we were smart enough and strong enough and gifted enough. And now, after growing our companies and our teams and our families, now you're really growing us. And tonight, some of us grew up. It's time to grow up. It's time to stop thinking Jew, Sumerian, Samaritan. It's time to stop thinking Republican, Democrat. We're in the kingdom. And we compete. And it is a means by which we connect. And even when it's a child who can't help us, we connect. On every court, in every classroom, in every office, may this be us. Help us. Because you're probably not in love with this church if you're not competitive at some level. Because it's just in our DNA here. And a lot of us have struggled with this for a long time. We needed this series to be free to apply our passions to make ourselves better. To be free from trying to make everybody else better, because that's not our business, including our kids. It just, everything goes to connecting. I know a lot of parents in our church right now are struggling with their kids because they're not working hard enough. And I don't have it all figured out, but may nothing sever that connection. Because really, at the end of the day, that's what really matters. And may we help each other stomp out our balloons. Because our battle is not against flesh and blood. It's not against our mom and dad. It's not against our children. It's not against our office worker. It's not against our ex. Our battle is against evil. Help us. May the best prayer we could just say, God, help us. And now we go to the table, the one who intentionally lost. He became last, that he might be the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And everyone said, amen. Amen. See you next week, everybody.